this episode, I speak to Helder Cruz, co-founder and chief scientific officer at Meatly, a cultivated chicken company based in the UK. Following a career in biopharma, Helder spent some time at Moss & Meat before co-founding Meatly with Owen Enser. Meatly made the news at the end of last year by obtaining the first regulatory approval in the UK and Europe to produce and sell cultivated chicken, specifically as an ingredient in pet food. Recently, they launched their product Chick Bites onto the market in the UK. This is the first pet food product made from cultivated meats to be sold anywhere in the world. I'm Alex Crisp, and welcome to another episode of Future Foods Interviews, available on all podcast providers and on Substack, where you can subscribe for free. Okay, so thank you, Helder Cruz, Chief Scientific Officer at Meatly. You come from a pharmaceutical background, and you have experience in cultivated meat, working for Moss & Meat in the past. And Meatly has been making quite a lot of headlines recently with its new pet food launch. So can you just sort of introduce yourself a little bit, and perhaps kind of tell us a little bit about how you came to be at Meatly?
Sure. Thank you for having me, Alex. So my background, as you said, the majority of it was in biopharma. So I did my PhD in producing recombinant proteins from animal cells, animal species cells, for tumor therapy. I did my PhD on that with a big pharma company. Later on, I started my own companies in that space back in Portugal. In 2019, I moved to cultivated meat because all the technologies are very similar. But in cultivated meat, we have the extra challenge, which is also quite motivating, of doing this at like 10 to 100,000 times lower cost, which is great. So in 2019, I just was excited with this new application of the animal cell technology that has been used for decades for biopharma, and went to Moss & Meat, as you mentioned, in Netherlands. And there were two great years there. And later on, I felt I could start my own company in this space. So I moved out, and while interacting with potential investors, there was some people from the UK addressing me with this idea of having cultivated meat, not for human consumption, but for pet food. And the rationale was great. So I totally adopted it. And myself and Owen, we started the company in March 2022, almost 3 years ago, and starting from like finding the right space to install the activities, building the team, hiring the people, and so on. So I think in almost 3 years, we really did well. Happy to share more.
Yeah, extraordinarily well in 3 years. So producing cultivated meat for animals, you said before that producing food instead of pharma grade cells is 1,000 times cheaper. And I suspect producing it for pet food is perhaps cheaper than producing it for animal for human food. So how is it that you can get it so cheap, and how is it cheaper for pet food than it is for human food?
So the most available pet food, the meat used for that is really affordable, around like £1 per kg or a bit more, like kind of byproducts coming from the meat industry. We are not competing with that. We are competing with more like premium meat, and we are talking maybe one order of magnitude higher. So on that, we are not like competing with the extremely low cost pet food. But nevertheless, when we compare with meat for human consumption, we need to get into very low cost levels. And that is an extra challenge, but it's great because if we succeed in producing cultivated meat for pet food, we will definitely succeed in also producing products for human consumption, because all the quality, all the safety is kind of the same. So on that, we are working to assure that if on top of that, we can produce cultivated meat with like more affordable at lower costs, then it's great. And we are doing that. So from the very beginning, the rationale in the company was like, let's have costs as a top priority from the beginning. And again, without any compromise on quality and safety. And let's put costs in all our short-term decisions. So everything we do in the company is with the ultimate goal of going industrial and going really low in the cost, keeping high quality and safety, of course.
So, what's the secret to kind of lowering the cost? I suppose scaling up is clearly the big one, right?
Yes. So there are different components in the cost, the operating costs. We have the culture medium. So the liquid with all the nutrients we need to feed the cells in order for them to grow, to multiply. And traditionally in animal cell technology, so animal cells are much more complex than bacteria and yeast, and we are all, I mean, we are familiar with bacteria and yeast because of all the products we have, drinks and yogurts and all that, and cheeses and so on. Animal cells that have been used industrially, the large majority for producing pharmaceuticals, and for that, cost is not the main question. So the culture medium to grow these cells is very rich and expensive. And in the beginning, a few decades ago, it was containing serum derived from animals' blood. So our main priority in the very beginning was to bring that high cost of the culture medium down. And we are talking about several hundred pounds per liter of medium. And we need several liters to produce 1 kg. So that cost is really crucial. And after this 2.5 year, because we did not start with the operations in the lab right away when we started, so we started like September, October, working on the medium. In 2.5 years, we could reduce costs almost 3,000 times. So that was the main driver for cost reduction. How do we do it? Because we have the knowledge, we know which are the areas that we need to explore. And basically, without going too technical, there are like around 50 components in the culture medium, and some are very expensive because they are produced from precision fermentation, like recombinant proteins, albumin, transferrin, insulin, growth factors that is the animal cells usually need for growing. So we started by analyzing all those, replacing them. So the first step was to go animal free, so no components coming from animal origin. And then we, of course, dealt with different suppliers to reduce costs, but that is fine, but not enough. And later on, what we really did, I think the differentiators is to replace all these, I would say, five to seven very expensive compounds into small, affordable, food-safe compounds. And that is not easy. And instead of just having like smaller versions of the expensive ones that may help cut costs like 3 to 5 times, we covered or we replaced the different functions those complex proteins have in culture. So we changed the way of looking at the problem. So we really thought like, completely in a different way. And of course, we need lots of work. We need to screen new compounds. So we have to have the right equipment and so on. But after this 2.5 years, we really eliminated, replaced all the expensive proteins in our culture medium, starting from 700 pounds to 22 pence per liter currently.
Okay. And you think you can get it cheaper than that, or is that as about as cheap as it can get?
So, in terms of the components we have, like the identity of the components, I think we are close to finalizing. In terms of exploring the economies of scale, we did not even start. So, by consulting the available compounds in the market, when we move from like grams, kilograms that we are purchasing now to the tons, we can have an extra 20 times cost reduction. So we will end like 1 pence, 1.5 pence per liter. And for animal cells, this is quite unique. I'm in this space for 30 years now. I started my research in 93, last century, yes. I've never seen something like this. So it's great that we are doing this, and I'm sorry if it looks a little bit like arrogant, but on that, I think we are leading the industry.
Do you really? So I suppose there's an awful lot of secrecy around your compounds and your IP. Well, when
Yes.
you're working with Mosa Meat, because their information is public, isn't it? Because it's part of a PhD. Is that right?
Part
Oh,
of it, yes.
part of it. So I suppose you kind of learned some stuff from there that you were able to kind of bring to Meatly.
Yes and no. Theoretically, yes, but no. So I mean, my previous experience also with different cell types and species. I work with murine cells, human cells, many different species. It's like all that knowledge, I think, is very important. So I even brought to my previous role the knowledge I already had built. But I think there's no universal solution. Maybe the approach, the way we think on finding solutions may be similar, but you never have a medium that will work like universally, meaning like Mosa Meat uses cow, so beef, they are producing beef, so the species is totally different. They were doing fat and muscle, and I mean you need different components for those two types of tissues. I think your PhD thesis that you mentioned was mostly about muscle differentiation, but yes, there are a few other on fat cells and so on. So there's not really, you cannot like adopt one the results in one cell species and process into here at Meatly. We started from the scratch. We tested different cells from different suppliers. We then ended up adopting the cells that chicken cells that we found like to be the most robust for our needs. And remember, when you start a journey on cost reduction, it's hard also for the cells. So not all the cells will kind of survive this journey. And so we did quite well in choosing our cells. We do some stressed tests. We call it to the cells in the beginning, like switching important components, see how the cells behave and so on. So each case is a case. And I would not say that the medium that we have now is going to work with cells from other species and so on. Nevertheless, the approaches, the options you test and so on, the rationale can be used. You always need to fine-tune to your current, challenge and system you have, the cells and the process that
Okay.
you, yeah.
Interesting. So, and I suppose the other thing with producing pet food is that you do not need to kind of create that meat-like texture. You don't have to create the kind of solid meat using a scaffold and those things. So does that make the process easier?
Exactly. Great that you mentioned that. So another I think advantage of starting with pet food is exactly that. So pets would test, of course, the flavor, the smell, the taste, but they don't care so much about, the structure, the looks, if it looks like a steak and so on. So that's exactly a very good point. And it makes our life easier and also in terms of cost is very relevant. So what we are doing is we are producing the biomass, the chicken biomass. And of course, we analyze it and the amino acid profile of the total protein is very similar, very parallel to the total amino acid profile in chicken breast, for example, which is great and shows that the nutritional value is there. But we don't need to complicate for now getting the looks, the texture, and so on, which is great because differentiation into muscle is very challenging because cells need to align, they need to fuse. It's like in terms of cellular biology, those that may be listening to us will know this is challenging and it's not cheap. And scaling is also very challenging. And since we don't want to do genetic modifications to other cell to ourselves, I mean, to make this affordable and efficient, also fast in culture is quite a challenge. So by opting for starting with pet food, we just eliminated those problems because we don't need them.
Okay.
And yeah.
So I suppose the dog food will be, will it be a kind of hybrid product? Will there be a, it'll be mixed with like a plant-based or sort of vegetable
Exactly.
product?
Exactly. So in my opinion, all cultivated meat, at least the first generation products, even for human consumption, they will always be a hybrid product. And there's nothing wrong with that. For example, if you want to go into a more structured meat, you need the scaffolds, and usually they come from the plant world. So I don't think the first generation products will be like pure cultivated meat, fat, and muscle. In our case, that's not different. And in our case, since we are not so concerned with the looks or the texture, this is fine. And I mean, naturally, it will be a hybrid product. So the majority will come of the ingredients, components will come from the plant world, and we will have a certain inclusion rate that we can start by 5 up to 20, 30% will be cultivated meat. And all this texture and so on can come from the other components from the plant world.
Yeah. And I suppose that is the same rationale why most of meat are developing fats as well, because it's easier to scale up, it's easier to poop, it's easier to produce, you don't need the scaffolding, and their product will also be a hybrid product. So how does how I think I can imagine it, but I'm not a scientist. So because you are creating a biomass, that's easier to scale up, so you can produce tons of it rather than, you know, grams of it. Is that true? Is it easier?
Yes, part is true because we don't have the two phases, the proliferation and the differentiation phase. And the differentiation is in the case of muscle a bit more challenging. The fact that we are doing the proliferation simplifies. Now, the cells to proliferate, to grow, to increase in numbers, to duplicate, they are more demanding in nutrients than they are in the second phase when they differentiate. So that's why yes and no, there's always like two ways of looking at this. In terms of the challenge of differentiating and scaling up differentiation, yes, it's a benefit for us not doing it because we don't need muscle differentiation. In terms of feeding the right nutrients at the right cost to have good proliferation rates, we call it. The challenge is the same because the majority of the cost will be to have the cells multiplying in the bioreactor. Now, one comment about scaling. Scaling with animal cells, because animal cells are fragile, bacteria and plant cells and yeast, they have a cell wall, like a rigid shell, let's call it, that protects them from shear stress and all this. Because in the bioreactors, we want everything to be mixed and so on. In a small bioreactor, that is not a problem. If you go to 1,000 and 10,000 and larger bioreactors, this becomes a problem. But there's always solutions to the different problems we face. But so it's not as easy to compare scaling up of animal cells, like for cultivated meat, with like yeast and bacteria, like often used for precision fermentation, for example. So it's really a bit more challenging in case of animal cells.
I see. Okay. I spoke to I met Owen last year at the Future Food Tech conference, and he told me that the plan eventually is to produce human scale meat at some point.
Exactly.
I suppose the kind of regulatory hurdles and kind of safety hurdles, are they? You mentioned at the start that they're pretty much the same. I mean, what is the difference between them? Is it harder to get approval for humans?
Yes, I would say is the process, the regulatory process itself. So my point when I mentioned that we could do both pet food and food for human consumption is because all our options, decisions that we take, like for example, the components in the culture medium, we are not using any component that could be potentially a allergen or whatever. So we call them questionable compounds. If you have a question mark about them, we just find a replacement. So every component in our culture medium is food safe, both for animals and humans. Then the options we take for like the equipment we use, how we harvest the cells and so on, everything is decided with the vision to have this industrial and that we could feed both animals or humans, no problem at all. So from the point of view of the process, the cells and the medium, we are more than comfortable. There will be no problem later on. Now, on the process itself, like the tests you need to make, the sensitivity of those tests, all this, the interaction with the authorities. Yes, it's more complex for cultivated meat for human consumption because also this industry is very recent. There are a few products, none in Europe, apart from our product for pet food, but like for human consumption, there are a few products in US, Singapore, and I think Australia. So it's like
Israel.
the authorities are also kind of learning how to deal with this. So it's natural. I think it will be a matter of more like extended time for the products for human consumption, not like on the substance, like what we are doing, the product we have is it nutritious? Yes. Is it safe? Yes. Now, the process, the tests, and whatever, we expect it to be a bit longer, take longer. And since we are a B2B, so we produce the ingredient, the cultivated meat is an ingredient for, a pet food or for food for human consumption. So we are not the manufacturers or the companies that have a brand. We have our Meatly brand as a kind of a stamp that we can have in the front of the pack, like with containing Meatly chicken, for example, but we are not the ones to have the brand for the consumer. So we are in conversation with several in the pet food area, but also in food for human consumption, because yeah, we need to find the right partners to, in fact, incorporate our ingredient into their products, their final products.
Okay, so you are in the so you are at a stage of trying to create a human product now. Have you started that process?
So we started conversations, having collaborations. From the point of view of the regulatory authorities, we are getting information because all this is quite recent. We are preparing to start. So we are very focused because we are not too many. And from the very beginning, we want to move as fast as possible. So our priority is like, let's bring the cost down, let's assure quality and safety, let's scale, and as soon as possible, let's release a product. We just did that. Now, which is not bad for like 2.5 years of operation. Now, we know we need to for the scale, because that's the way of also meeting the expectations, because as you know, our first product is only in one shop of a network of over 400 pets at home. And we want to, people from outside UK are also asking, where can I buy and so on. So it's like there's an interest, there are expectations, and we need to fulfill those. So we need to scale as fast as we can. Our plans is to go to a pilot facility later this year. So we will need to raise more funds for that. And that pilot facility will be already producing a decent amount of our product. And in the next 2 to 3 years, we need to go industrial, really large bioreactors. And we will be close around a ton per day of production of our ingredient. If it's like 30% inclusion rate, the final product will be four times more than the volume will be. And that is, I mean, in the meat market is still low, but nevertheless, we are starting to get like interesting quantities in the market. And we prefer to keep like the focus on delivering on that, because also cultivated meat industry, in my opinion, needs to deliver. Needs to show that this is possible, because we have been promising a lot in the last, 7 years, I would say. And now we need to deliver. And after that, or like when we feel we are kind of comfortably advancing, we can start with parallel processes.
So, like you say, I suppose in the beginning of this industry, there was a lot of money pumped into it, and for a long time, people didn't really see much come out of it. So, the last year or two has been quite tight for raising funds. You said you need to raise more funds. Do you think that's going to be difficult?
Yes. So if we look at what is happening, yes, it's getting very difficult. And I think the industry or the companies that are in this industry are responsible for that, because there's uncertainty and there's, I mean, in biological systems and the new technology, new kind of a family of products and so on, is even the uncertainty is higher. And when you promise and you don't deliver or it takes longer, I mean, the investors will start either not investing or doubt or be more demanding. Okay, this is, I think, if we look outside of our company, since our strategy was always to deliver, cut costs, and like put the product in the market at already a kind of an affordable cost, not like much lower than the cost of production. I think we are in a different position. Nevertheless, we don't underestimate the challenges. And I think it will be difficult, more difficult than a couple of years ago. But nevertheless, I think we already now we have a track record of how did we face and find solutions for the problems, how we cut costs already, how we are going to reduce costs in the future, because I think the major operating cost, the culture medium, is kind of solved. And we have, like, as I mentioned, this 20 times cost reduction by economies of scale, and we can prove it because we went to the market to prove this. But there's the other also very relevant pillar in terms of cost, which is the facility depreciation. Because if you have traditionally these technologies, animal cell technology, when they go industrial, they use biopharma type of facilities like qualified treated air, which is expensive to run, bioreactors that are like extreme high quality, only a few manufacturers in the world. I mean, if I would tell you the bioreactor we are developing in-house costs like 20 times the cost of let's say biopharma bioreactor at this site, 200 this volume, 2 to 300 liter, they can cost a quarter of a million or more. And we are doing this as a fraction of the cost. We are proving that other cost dimensions or pillars that are very important, that I don't think the industry is addressing them as we are, that it's possible also to develop equipment and facilities that can be a fraction of the cost that they used to be. And all these together show that we can reach price parity, not, I mean, I hope still this year, but in 12 months and 2 or 3 years more, we can go as low as like 1 pound per kg, lower than 1 pound per kg, the operating costs. So there will be room for the facility depreciation. I mean, of course, energy, people, and so on, although people also can be, I mean, partially replaced, not the people, but we can minimize by automation and so on. So there's lots of areas to explore, but we go step by step. We solve the problems, we find the solutions, and not problems that we solve in the lab, problems that we want to go industrial. When we go industrial, they are solved. So it's like we have this long-term vision that everything we do now in the lab needs to make to have an impact when we go industrial. So that's what I would say. And sorry, it's a bit a long
No, it's very
answer, but
interesting. So the bioreactor that you're building now, or is more expensive upfront costs, or no, it's cheaper.
exactly.
Right.
So the
Okay.
bu so instead of buying a quarter of a million or more bioreactor coming from the biopharma
Okay.
industry, we were saying, I mean, for a short term, this could be acceptable, but in the long run, all those facilities cost tens of millions, just a facility. So it's like, how can we address this problem early on? So we designed and changed the materials and, you know, the components, and we are having a prototype in the lab, which it's already a pilot, because it will be 200, 250 liter bioreactor that it, I mean, after that, the learning and the materials and the design will be used for larger bioreactors in our own larger facility outside later this year.
So how much is yours costing you then compared to what the biopharma ones would cost?
We want to be at least 10 times. Currently, we are 20 times cheaper.
Okay.
But we are very cautious. It's like we are still doing it. You never know. Let's have some margin that we may need to change components that may be more expensive. But like the goal is really to be between 10 and 20. If we would cut costs 10 times, I
So there's
mean,
a lot
we
of
will.
and so there's clearly a lot of value in the technology and the IP that you're developing. So I mean, it's I suppose this is going to be part of the value of the company going forward, right? Technology.
Exactly. So some of that IP can be protected by patents. So we did submit one patent already on the bioreactor design, but we have two more patents in the next 2 months, like on, you know, other components like that we need to operate to bring that cost down. We want to be away from the cost of pharma because our product is not as expensive as a pharma product. The other option is keep as a trade secret. For example, the culture medium formulation. If we patent, I mean, we will open, and then patenting is like you need to be able to patent, but then you need to be able to enforce that the patent is respected. And I mean, a small company local now in UK, we are not a global multinational. We don't have those means. So in case of the media formulation, it's more effective to keep it as a trade secret. And just to, it's a good example, like Coca-Cola,
I was going to
if they
say
would have
Coca-Cola.
patented, yeah, they would have lost the formulation.
It's kind of easier to just hide it away in a safe than it is to protect it, because obviously when it's patented, it's made public, right? So anyone,
Exactly.
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so I suppose one of the other big hurdles is it's kind of unusual to imagine that food that was initially made for dogs and cats. Pets generally will then be made for human beings, and will the humans kind of find that a little bit unusual? What do you think would be the response to that?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, we are producing the cultivated meat as an ingredient. So the final products will be different, okay? The looks and so on. So ideally, we would incorporate our ingredient into plant-based, like scaffolds and so on, and end up, we can also do some, if needed, fat differentiation because our cells have that potential to give a bit of more flavor, whatever is needed in order to fine-tune for human consumption. My point, so it's not like the same product at the end, the same ingredient that we are producing, the safety and quality is the same. So on that, there's no differentiation, no difference. But the final product, of course, there will be a difference. Now, how can the consumer perceive this? I think we have to separate completely kind of the business in terms of like maybe the production facility, the for sure the brand, another brand to separate completely. But I have to say, in substance, a very well-informed customer should be comfortable to know that, you know, in terms of safety and quality and nutritional value, there's no big difference. Is this bad? I don't think so. It already happens because the premium pet food uses high quality meat and it's competing already with the meat for human consumption. So we already have that, but okay, in niche markets. And I don't think if communication will be effective that we should have a problem.
And how have the retailers and the consumers been accepting the product since you launched it?
Oh, so far, so good. I think people are excited. Of course, we are talking like early adopters, but people are happy. They are excited. They are asking when do we have, you know, treats for cats. And I just had a few people approaching me, like, where can I buy in continental Europe? So from several locations, Netherlands, Germany, Switzerland. It's like, I think, it's the limitation now is how much we can supply, not like the consumers are like doubting and so on. When the volumes will increase, of course, we will need to have an effort. Maybe we need to start now of like educating, communicating, because there's lots of misconceptions about cultivated meat. There's lots of, opaqueness, I would say, not very transparent. And this is also coming from different actors, different companies in the industry because they have different products, different challenges. They communicate in ways that, yeah, may sometimes harm us. Like I heard once, I think it was an investor like, but you cannot grow cells without growth factors. It's like, no. No, you need to dif to genetic modify the cells. I was like, sorry, no. And I have an example. During my PhD 30 years ago, I used protein free with no growth factors, no nothing. In my work, it's like published and whatever. So that's not true. Oh, but these guys told me, okay, in their case, that may be true, but it's like you cannot generalize. And we are doing our job in trying to educate because each case is a case. We have different species, beef or a cow and pigs and chicken at least, and then also fish, different fish species, different needs, different final products. Some people are very concerned about it should look like a steak or this and that. Is like, yeah, each case is a case. Let's not generalize, but we need to educate the people and the consumers and the stakeholders in general.
Clearly, you've achieved a great deal since you've been there at Meatly. I'm wondering what are the unknowns now? What are the big challenges that you're going to face that perhaps keep you up at night at the moment to the scaling level?
Yeah, I mean, we are always motivated and trying to find solutions, but like I sleep very well at night. But yes, the challenge is, I mean, I like concerns. I would say, so it's nothing like go, no go. Are we going to fail and stop activities? I don't think we have that because we have proven that we can anticipate and overcome. But like the hurdles, the challenges are scaling to very high volumes like 20,000 liter bioreactors, for example, keep the cost reduction going. And this is not for me a big challenge, but it's something that you always need to test, like components coming from different geographies, different suppliers, da, da, da. But it's like there's always many options. We can go even lower than our estimates because sometimes it's what happens. But it's like we have been also very conservative. So market acceptance is like, of course, it's a concern. But I think if we have the right products with the right quality, safety, and cost, I think people will adopt when, yeah, because when they ignore a technology, a product, whatever, people always like pass on the decision to buy. If they are comfortable with the information they get, and we are very open to and transparent to discuss, to share, and we will also start a few publications that we have in mind to contribute also for that transparency and information. I think adoption, I mean, it's never easy, but I think it's not a big challenge. So scaling to extreme volumes. Now I have to say, did we get information to be comfortable? Of course, there are examples where very reputable, let's say, industry companies, not in cultivated meat, have achieved with the same kind of technologies with the animal cells, of course, for biopharma in this case, like 30,000 liters, and they are like working on a regular basis. And so it's like, yes, our goal is to reach 10 to 20,000 liter. Can this be achievable? Yes. Is it like nobody did in the past? No, nobody did in cultivated meat, but like with the animal cells, animal cell technology. Yes. So are we kind of comfortable? Yes. Do we underestimate challenges? Never. So it's this balance. So quite comfortable with the challenges ahead.
Okay. Well, I can hear the excitement in your voice. You're obviously very
Okay.
pleased with the way things are going. Now there's I've kind of noticed recently that there's a number of food manufacturers, quite big brands who are quite famous maybe for their ultra processed or kind of processed meats and cheeses and things, who are trying to edge into the alternative proteins market. So clearly there's a movement into this space and a growing acceptance. So you're talking about sort of consumer acceptance. So I mean, personally, I think that the risk there is diminishing with time. I mean, would you accept that?
I totally agree. Yes. And on your comment about the industries that could jump into, we had a delegation from Catalonia, so from Barcelona, a few months ago. And they asked to visit the lab and have a meeting. And of course, we said, I said, of course, yes. But they were like, meat processing industry, traditional chorizo and this and that. And I was like, the first question I had, they were like around 20 people. I was like, I'm very curious why you asked for this meeting. Are you seeing us as competitors or like as an opportunity? And the answer was consensual, as an opportunity. This is the future. So they are educating. It was not to establish collaborations for now. They wanted to see the process, talk to us. They are educating themselves because they know this is the future. It's quite spectacular, I would say.
Well, exactly that. I mean, I've been contacted directly as well to for a company, a similar company who wants to sort of get into this market. So it's clearly, I guess people clearly know which way the wind is blowing.
Exactly. Exactly.
If they're in on it. So finally, I know it's not only enthusiasts who watch these podcasts, it's also investors. So Agronomics is one of your chief investors, isn't it? So when do you think Meatly specifically might be turning a profit? When do you think you might be kind of seeing, kind of showing a return of investment in that regard?
Yes, I mean, you mentioned investors and agronomics has been a great, and Jim Mellon is our chairman. I mean, great supporters, and I really need to acknowledge our technical economical model is showing us that if we achieve, and I have to say, again, sorry if this comes across like arrogance. We always delivered more than we promised because we have a certain margin of uncertainty, and we are always comfortable with what we promise, and we expect to overpromise. So we have always achieved the milestones before we plan to achieve them. So when we achieve the 20,000 liter bioreactor, we will have a full production line. So our goal is to show that we achieve the maximum scale, and with one production line, like what we call the seed train, preparation of the cells from larger to larger to the big production bioreactor, that we can get profitable. And I mean, we need also to pay back the facilities, of course. So we took that into account, and by also reducing that investment, we reduced the period to have the money, the payback period to have those facilities and so on. If we achieve around 1 pound in the 20,000 as we intend to, and some of the figures go as low as 70 cents, 70 pence per kg and so on. So there's some variability. In the next 5 years, we should be profitable. Now, again, if it's four or six, we don't know. Seven, if things go like the components that we use for the media increase the cost and so on. So there's always uncertainty. Nobody can tell you. There's no uncertainty, but what I want to stress is like this is a matter of time only, because we don't find solutions that will not work or whatever. It's like we know they will work. We might need 3 more months or less or whatever, and with the payback is exactly the same. if we achieve even lower costs than we thought, because like we did not have any negotiation for prices, we did not consider that. But the price of energy also can go high or da da da. It's like there are so many variables that, to be very honest, we cannot give you a date, but we can give you a range. But definitely will be like it won't take too long. And just as a comparison, we had this facility in California a couple of years ago that was ready to start producing cultivated meat. I don't want to name the company, but that facility cost by then $100 million, and the output they would say would generate 1 million. And someone like, 100 years to get the money back is like we are not at that level, and we are very concerned about every cost because we want to address that. We really want to deliver, and we want to show. I'm not saying we want to be the only ones. I expect many more companies can do this, but we want also to contribute to make cultivated meat a reality, affordable reality. And like in quantities that we can have that impact that in the environment and so on that people talk about. But yeah, it's taking a bit longer than we thought before.
Well, I mean, there were some big promises, weren't there, 5 years ago or so. But I suppose having Jim Mellon on your board, because the other portfolio companies like Liberation Labs, I know their technology is not for cultivated meat, it's more sort of precision
Precision,
fermentation.
exactly.
But
Exactly.
he has I suppose he's able to use one company to help another company, perhaps. Is that something that happened?
Yeah, he promotes some conversations and networking, yes, and also with investors, his network. So it's really an asset. And yeah, I always acknowledge and to him also because it has been great. And we are now in a position that, of course, we need to get more investors and investors that ideally could also work with us on later phases. But yeah, agronomics has been great.
I know I said that was the last question, but there's one more if you have time. I mean, you were
No problem.
talking, saying that you mentioned the word inevitable earlier. So do you feel like it is inevitable that this will happen, that the kind of cultivated meat technology and the industry will take off? Or do you think there's something that could put a spanner in the works, maybe, that could be a problem?
I still think it's inevitable. Now, will all the options considered will survive or be economically viable? And I don't want to go into like details that you could identify companies, but for example, extremely well structured, good-looking product, 3D printed or something like that, you feel. I mean, are all these technologies scalable? Do we have affordable components to get this product? Maybe not now. So all those products I would consider like a second generation, I would say. But I may be wrong. It's just my opinion. I think the like mincemeat pate like products, and we have also some examples in the East, like products that can be simple in like structure, the looks, but having the taste, the nutritional profile we want, and the safety, of course, that we could partially replace traditional meat. I think, yeah, it's happening already. There are not many examples. Cost is still a problem, but I mean, we want to be a contributor, a major contributor to that, because we were focused on cost initially. But maybe we start by not being like too ambitious in every aspect and being more realistic. What can we deliver in 2 to 3 years, or what is happening now? It's like that people can afford. and not like let's postpone the delivery and like costing thousands, or it's not difficult to have thousands per kg if we do the math. So it's like, yeah, that is not going to fly. And are we going? And again, just on the impact, if we want, because cultivated meat is about also having an impact on the environment, on the animals' lives, and so on. It's like, are we going to get that, to contribute to that positive impact by producing, I don't know, a ton per year? No, it needs to be a ton per day, or in the future, even much more. Exactly. So it's like, are people going to buy? So a cost of price parity or below, is it attractive? I think it will be. It will work because people also think with their pocket. And if safety and quality and so on is there, people will inevitably buy. Could our ingredient be used in processed food? I don't know, meatballs and burgers. And I mean, not with chicken, maybe, but fingers or whatever the products are. Yes, maybe yes. And we need to accept that for getting an impact, we cannot start by like the end of it, like, you know, highly structured products that are luxuries and so on. Maybe for Michelin stars that can afford, restaurants that could afford. So we need to be very humble, I think, but we need to be very ambitious on the impact.
Well, Helder, thank you so much for answering my questions and for coming on to the Future of Foods interviews. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Alex. It's a great opportunity to kind of share our experience.
Well,
Thank
I'll
you.
be following your progress and perhaps we'll meet at some sort of event. Nice to talk to you. Thanks. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.